One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. Well, we have a lot coming up from the latest report from IFAC with some surprising figures to advice from an army officer turned yoga instructor discussing mindfulness, which someone told me beforehand that farmers wouldn't be interested in, but I refuse to pigeonhole the listenership of the podcast. Some of you might be into doing downward facing dog before going for the cows every morning. But first up, a more traditional farming theme of milk. And some of you will have spotted that the National Dairy Council, or NDC, has a new campaign out called From the Ground Up. Here is a flavour of what the new campaign is all about.
It rains in Ireland up to 225 days a year. You've probably noticed. Soft rain, heavy rain, driving rain. We know. We're outside. Every single day. Because as dairy farmers, we've long understood that the rain, the pasture and the herd are all part of what makes Irish dairy unique. Soft rain, green grass, healthy animals. A bit of drizzle. Small price to pay to get milk as good as we do. Don't you think? The National Dairy Council. From the ground up.
That was, of course, one of the new radio ads from the NDC that's been launched this week, along with TV and ads in newspapers. I spoke to the CEO of the NDC, Zoe Kavanagh, about the campaign, which aims to tackle the disconnect between what some consumers think happen on dairy farms to what actually happens.
So you have a new campaign, and I guess it's interesting looking at the evolution of all your campaigns, starting from the 1960s. I mean, the most memorable one for me would be dem bones, need calcium. But times have changed. And I think From the Ground Up, the name of your campaign, really reflects that. So can you tell us just a bit about it?
So the ambition of this new campaign is to highlight the importance of Irish dairy farmers in our everyday lives. And the campaign is all about connection. Connecting consumers with where their food comes from, connecting consumers to Irish dairy production. And actually, it's about fortifying consumers' trust in the Irish dairy production system. All our research shows us that there is a growing disconnect between consumers and, you know, food provenance. And furthermore, our research is showing us that the dairy portfolio, an Irish dairy product portfolio, is in really high regard. So the scores for the products in terms of health, nutrition, love, consumption have really increased. Some of it is a COVID effect as consumers return to trusted products, but also it's been a heartland space for the National Dairy Council. We've just come out of a strategy that was ruthlessly focused on reassuring the questioning consumer with regard to product portfolio and reasons to consume. But what we've observed is there are a growing number of questions in the consumer's mind with regard to the production system. And those questions have come from, you know, the climate change agenda and queries around the environmental impact of production. And despite our grass-based system, which is recognized as being a superior system, there's really a lack of awareness and knowledge around why. And we feel now is the time to represent Irish dairy farmers, reintroduce them to the Irish consumer, and start building up a picture that is both accurate of Irish dairy production, but also one that inspires pride.
And it's interesting that you use the word trust, because a lot of dairy farmers that I've interviewed feel like they've lost consumer trust between vegan campaigns and between maybe even their own children, they tell me, are drinking plant-based milks now as well. And I know in your previous campaign, there was a lot of focus around that. But I think what farmers feel like they're being kind of charged with as well is animal welfare issues. So is that something that you're trying to address in this, and kind of restoring the trust in Irish dairy farming?
Absolutely, because if you look at the moving parts of the production system, you know, everything starts with the land. And then, you know, once you present a farming family with the land, you've got people and you've got animals. And the product cannot be produced without care for the people, for the land, and for the animals. And I think we have spent a lot of time talking about the output, as in the product portfolio, but we need to come back and educate consumers around the practice, particularly here in Ireland. And, you know, we've spoken to dairy farmers, and what they have told us is they feel they've lost the support of the home crowd. And we have identified the social license to produce as an area where we need to win hearts and minds. So in other words, here in Ireland, we need to ensure that consumers and communities are proud of Irish dairying and dairy farming. And where I think over the past number of years, they've been confronted to almost weigh up the balance between the nutritional benefit of the product portfolio and the environmental cost. And somewhere the debate has lost balance. And I think there is a role on behalf of sector for a discussion to take place with consumers about Irish dairy farming and its practices, inspire trust that our farmers are doing the right thing by their animals and their environment, such that it is a sustainable model in the longer term, because it's become such a valuable model.
I guess the sustainability as well, and mentioning the environment, I mean, a lot of farmers were taken aback by the RTE programme, What Planet Are You On? So is it partly a response to kind of reassert the environmental elements of Irish dairy farming?
Absolutely, and almost bring it back to facts, because I think what we find is every time this topic comes up around environment, it goes global. And a lot of the negativity comes from a place that actually is not a reflection of Irish practice. Now, that is not to say the Irish dairy sector doesn't have a set of actions it needs to pursue in order to be sustainable longer term. But let's, you know, start with the facts. We are in one of the most carbon efficient producers in the world because of the grass-based system. And that's a good starting point, but it doesn't mean that we get a free pass. We have to get better. And there's been a huge amount of work done in the system to identify how we get better. And now what we need to do is talk to consumers in a way that they can relate to about the actions that are being taken on farm to ensure soil, water, nutrient management, along with animal care and overall biodiversity is on the agenda. And this is effectively an opportunity for Ireland to be the best small dairy producing nation in the world. But I think we've been very busy as a sector talking internally. We haven't had any dialogue with the consumer, and yet programs like you've just referred to are capturing consumers' attention and actually creating a lot of anxiety. So I think we need to just step up now and in a very transparent way, show the consumer what Irish dairy farming is about, and share with them what we're doing to be better in the longer term.
I guess a lot of dairy farmers, part of their frustration though, is that they feel like they are doing a lot and that they are logging, say, their environmental criteria or their sustainability criteria through their Boardbia work that they do. I mean, is that something that you'd like to maybe share with Boardbia, those statistics that they are collecting about Irish dairy farms?
Yeah, I think once you step into the space of talking about the production system, you have to back it up with facts. Pretty pictures and beautiful TV ads are insufficient to balance the debate. So having the proof points to back up the communication is essential, because we don't want to be accused of greenwashing. And our farmers you know, have been subject to a significant level of auditing for a number of years now. And actually, what we'd love to do is take the relevant audit data and show the path of progress in the areas that count, as I say, soil, water, nutrient management, grass growth, days out on grass. I think as a system, we're ready to do that now. And obviously, the National Dairy Council has an expertise in understanding consumers, understanding marketing, and taking a leadership role on that. We're by no means auditors, but we are good at messaging. And I think what we need to do now is we are beholden to farmers to actually talk about their path of progress. I think we do it frequently within the sector to each other, but we have not done it with the consumers. And as part of From the Ground Up, while we launch our TV advertising campaign this evening, along with, you know, our print and our online and our radio, the most important people in this campaign are the farmers. And we will be recruiting a suite of ambassadors, and they will tell their story to the consumer. And, you know, ultimately, we will be inviting consumers in to witness the path of progress and those who influence consumers, so key opinion leaders. So I think we need to be transparent. We need to shine a light on progress. We need to map out an action plan where action is required, because it is a challenge. And this sector is going to look very different in 10 years' time from where it looks today. But I think it will retain its grass credentials, its family farming model. It'll move into that seventh generation, and animal care will be at the heart of everything we do.
I guess mentioning kind of glossy or shiny TV ads, it all does take a lot of money. And while a lot of our listeners are going to be dairy farmers, some of them might not be. So will you just break it down? How is the National Dairy Council funded?
So the National Dairy Council is funded by 65% of Irish dairy farmers today. And that comes through a levy system. 0.07 cent per litre, and actually our levy income amounts to about €3.5 million, and we leverage that levy income then with Europe to bring in a further €2 million. What might really shock people is, for such a big and important, economically important sector that dairy is, when you look at the top 50 advertisers in Ireland, dairy has no voice. So one of our observations is, year on year, the NDC, funded at the level it's funded, can spend around 750,000 on its messaging. The number 50 spend in the Irish marketplace is 2.4 million. So while we're coming up with what we think is great work, and we want to take a leadership position here, we're very clear that in order to have impact, we need to invest in reconnecting the consumer with the dairy farmer. So if, for example, we move from a 65% representation model to 100% representation model, we believe in the next year we could move to a top 50 advertising space, and then in year two and year three move to a top 30 advertising space. And that's the point at where you have impact.
Just to break that down for people, that's basically, say, not all dairy processors or co-ops are on board yet. So you'd like all of them.
Yeah. We have four co-ops who are not members of the National Dairy Council. And actually, when we speak to the farmers of those co-ops, some of them believe they already are supporting the National Dairy Council. But I'll be very honest, this is the first time we have presented a body of work which unifies both member farmers and non-member farmers. Because when you get into the space of having a communication around your social license to produce, it doesn't matter if you're exporting or selling domestically. If you cannot produce, and if you're being curtailed, and if the production levels and model is under threat, everyone will feel the impact of that. So we actually feel very confident that now we're presenting the sector unifying model, and we expect farmers now to come together from the ground up and back their sector. And we're saying we will deliver on behalf of farmers, And what's happening today is just the first step. It's just chapter one. It's a 6-week program. We have lots of other work that we want to sit in behind this, but it is to demonstrate to the system, we've got a good diagnosis of what the sector needs. Now we need to fund the medication program.
And last but not least, how can people engage?
We want people to engage. First of all, we want ambassadors to stick their hands up and say, I want to be a part of this. I want to be a spokesperson on behalf of my sector. So we're very much inviting comments. In fact, through our website, we're now going to have a dedicated space for farmer engagement. And in that space, we actually want to work with producers on our advertising material, on our events, and we want them to help us work with us and help shape it. We also want to have the opportunity to go around and talk both to members and non-members, either through the boardroom or through farmer meetings. So I feel we're going to go on a recruitment campaign and have a very open discussion, because what we're putting forward, as I say, is a model which we believe the sector needs, but we're very much open to feedback so that we shape this to win and make Irish dairy farming something we're proud of and Irish dairy farmers held up high within their communities.
Zoe Kavanagh there, and the full version of that interview is online. Now, staying traditional, our correspondent Tommy Moyles spoke to the new IFA sheep chair, Sean Dennehy, about the sheep trade, which continues to thrive as Muslims across the world celebrate Ramadan, a period of fasting and, thankfully for Irish farmers, feasting.
Huge confidence around sheep at the moment. I suppose since the start of last year, it's been a good trade, and it hasn't come back in any way all during the summer of last year and into the fall. And we had a good trade for breeding sheep, we had a good trade for store lambs, we had a good trade for hoggets at the end of the year. And then coming into this year, we have a good trade as well for hoggets all through the spring. And at the moment, hoggets are at a record price. Hoggets are making €8 a kilo at the moment, which is never before heard of. Spring lambs are at €8.50. So, you know, there's a huge reason for farmers to be confident going forward.
I suppose factories have been, despite the prices, factories have been very active for lamb. Does this set a new precedent in that the market can return higher prices without a negative impact on demand?
Oh, definitely. You know, the way the food service has been closed, and in spite of that, lambs have still been a steady trade. I suppose one of the factors that has helped the trade in Ireland is the fact that European production has dropped back significantly over the last 10 years, and Ireland has been one of the few countries that increased production. And as well as that, then the way New Zealand are sending a lot of their lambs into China, and that has helped hugely, and that goes back to the swine flu. So that's, you know,
That vacuum in Asia has been benefiting the trade here. I suppose primary producers then who traded lambs in early 2020, they didn't get the major benefit from last year's upturn. Have they caused to be a bit more optimistic now that they're going to be trading into an improved market for the up until June at least anyway?
Yeah, I can't see anything to disrupt the trade until June. You know, numbers are very tight at the moment. It's very hard for factories to get hoggets. Numbers are very tight on the ground, and we've had no heat. So you know, numbers of spring lamb are going to stay tight for a while too. And it'll be at least June before there's any big numbers start coming in. Spring lambs.
Would part of that, I suppose, that deficit in hogget numbers be down to extra numbers going for breeding last year, or just extra lamb slaughtered?
There was no reason for people to speculate on price. Price was good all through the back end and all through the start of the year. And, you know, producers and finishers took the price that was on offer every week. They saw it as a good price, even if it went up the following week. When you go picking your lambs 3 weeks later, you still have the benefit of a higher price. So,
I suppose, moving slightly from the market, one of the IFA sheep committees, one of their big targets in recent years has been to secure a higher quality assurance payment. How do you think progress is going in that?
We've been in touch with MMII, and we've been in constant contact with the factories, and you know, we're working on this, trying to get it up to 30 cents a kilo. Like the return of 10 cents a kilo, in light of the prices now, it's not really returning much to the farmers. And you know, it really, there has to be an enhanced quality assurance payment in order to attract more people into it. And all we're hearing is that they want more people. So, you know, there has to be an enhanced way of doing that, and that way is to pay a better bonus.
Now, there was a small kerfuffle in the podcast HQ this week over the inclusion of a podcast from Irish Country Living about yoga. Some people doubted that the farmers listening to the IFJ podcast could stomach anything to do with stretching or lycra. But in the end, we thought that everyone could manage 3 minutes of mindfulness. So here is the lovely Anne O'Donoghue from Country Living talking to Catherine Callahan, who went from being an army officer to a yoga and mindfulness expert.
Do you think that you see more of a shift now towards people coming to yoga and mindfulness and meditation and practices like that? Would you think, Catherine, in your opinion, is that a direct result of living in a busier world? Are people searching for that kind of stillness, that grounding nature, because our world is, I know, as you said, there's the pandemic has been in the middle of it, but there's still been stress induced by that, that we're living in a more stressful environment, perceivably, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree with you, Anne. Yeah, I think that, because I think that our essence, like our nature, the nature of people is to, we need stillness, we need it, like, and if we've been busy for so long, you know, you'll get to, like me in my 20s when I thought, gosh, you know, if I could, you know, fly in business class, it'd be deadly, and you know, having all this money, it'll be deadly, and seeing all these people or these places, this is going to be deadly, this is going to be great. But like, when you get there and you experience all of that, you realize, actually, this isn't, on the surface it's lovely, but I'm missing something deeper down. And I think that people become disillusioned. Anybody that I find that comes to yoga or mindfulness, and sometimes people come to yoga for physical reasons, but then what they find then is that, oh, I'm really enjoying the mental and the emotional benefit that I'm receiving as well. But I think, yeah, people become disillusioned, in my experience, because the, like, you know, the pattern, you know, you go to school, you go to university, you get a job, you get, you know, promotion, you get to drive this car, you have this home, you collect all of these material things, and then you'll be happy. Yet we can gather all of those, but I'm still not feeling happy. I'm still not feeling whole. I'm still not feeling real. There's still something missing. So what are we going to fill it with? Well, sometimes we fill it with alcohol or buying more stuff, clothing, or, you know, I'm still feeling a bit hollow. I'm still not feeling right. And so then you get to that point and you think, right, well, I'll chance this thing. Maybe this will give me something. And all it, for me, all it offers, or what it offers, is it offers a chance to pause. And like I tried to say in my podcast, I'm not trying to say to anybody, this is the way to be. I'm just trying to remind, that's my role, remind people of the stuff that they already know.
And if you want to hear more, you can check out the full podcast on our website. Stay tuned, because we'll be back after this.
Beef price breaks €4 per kilo as farmers take back control. For more in your Farmer's Journal, here's Paul Mooney.
We analyse what's driving trade with MART reports from across the country. Department of Agriculture considers clampdown on fertiliser use to meet climate targets. New EU law means extra TB tests for up to 20,000 herds and 2 million straw bales to be ploughed into the ground under climate plan.
Plus, get your free 20-page special on meeting dairy beef challenges inside this week's Irish Farmer's Journal, on sale now.
Well, spring trade continues to be strong in Marts, and beef editor Adam Woods caught up with the Arrivo Marts general manager Stephen Hannan to chat about the Mart trade and outlook for the rest of the spring.
I want there for these cattle at the moment. It has picked up again in the last few weeks. Store cattle, grazing cattle, very good as well. Plenty of grassmen out, and the 7 month men were out in force. The weanling type bullocks there, 300 kilo, freely making up on 270, 280 a kilo. store heifers there, the weanland heifers again, like their bulls, very strong trade as well. 270, 280 kilo heiferings there, no problem getting them into €900. Dry cows, as has been for the past number of months. Great demand for the heavier, really good continental tight limousines and Charolais. €2 a kilo there and over for some of them, and back to 170, 180 for the store cows. So all in all, there's a great demand there for cattle. The online is working very well. It's amazing how people have adapted to it, and farmers and buyers have adapted to it. And it's the only show in town at the moment. But yeah, a great clearance there. We had a very good clearance, nearly 900 cattle there on offer, and plenty of buyers and plenty of activity on the online.
The breeding heifer, Stephen, she's been the story of the spring. Are you seeing that in your marts across the West in terms of those big, big prices? There's huge confidence there in the suckler sector at the moment.
Yeah, and it's great to see it. And it's what we want here in the West of Ireland, that the suckler herd is being stabilised, and that there's a buzz there at the moment between young farmers for these. If they're the right colour and the right shape, there's no end to what they can make. And it's happening there in Ballon and every mart. For the last couple of months, it's great to see it. It's confidence in the suckler business going forward. And the other side of that is that these heifers, when they come back as a dry cow in 2 years' time, or if they go wrong after a calf or two, they are still worth a lot of money, and they could be worth €2,000 there as a young cow after one or two calves as well. So that's helping the business, that the dry cow is worth, the young dry cow is worth a lot of money. And that is helping the business, but there is great demand for those right coloured heifers at the moment.
Are you getting any feedback on Beam, Stephen, in terms of purchasers not being able to buy cattle, or has that pretty much been sorted out in a lot of herds at the moment?
Beam was a worry to us earlier on in the year. Guys seem to have got around it, whatever way they have got around it, but we do know also that there are people that hasn't bought yet because of Beam, and we do see cattle being a good trade maybe right throughout the summer when these guys come back in July, looking to stock up. So Beam, while this was a worry there earlier on in the year, it hasn't affected the trade an awful lot. Neither has Brexit, was a big fear there. Last back in, we were worrying about Brexit, and really cattle are a great trade at the moment, so Brexit not taking much of an effect at the moment either.
Finally, Northern trade, are you seeing much across all your marts in terms of that Northern trade? We're hearing those Northern customers very, very strong coming down, price of sterling and a beef price in the North. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it's the Northern customers were always good to us here in the West, and particularly in marts like Mohill and Ballymote and Ball. And that trade is, whilst it was slacker there the last couple of years, there is a momentum there at the moment. There is more activity from the North, and the breeding heifers is definitely one end of that's going north. Also, the real good heavy cow and the factory fits bullocks and heifers are also travelling north. So yeah, there's a combination of people around at the moment which is driving the trade. And there's a positive feeling from farmers around the marts at the moment. And fair play to the people that set up the online. It is a great outlet at the moment, and it's only showing down.
Adam Woods with that report there. Now, it is that time of year when IFAC come out with a new report. Phelim O'Neill spoke to Philip O'Connor of IFAC, who revealed the mood of farmers based on 1,700 survey responses across all sectors collected in December and January.
I'm joined by Philip O'Connor here, Head of Farm Support with IFAC, on the launch of their annual farm report for 2021. Philip, this is a report, I suppose, that pretty much covers the effect of COVID-19 and the other issues of the past year. What are the highlights of the report for you?
Well, there's a number of interesting highlights across it. Like, so I suppose the if you look at it less slightly like sectors, like, I mean, if you look at technology and what part that had to play in it, we all went into COVID. No surprise that 86% of farmers say that broadband is essential to their business. No shock there. A high percentage of farmers also came back and said that they wanted online mart selling to continue. So 70% of farmers. And that was both consistent across all the farmers, and was pretty much similar as well when we looked at the beef sector, when the beef farmers answered that 70% wanted the online mart selling to continue on. When we looked at this, was the impact of COVID. It was no massive surprise, I suppose, again, in some of the stats that came out there. One was like, and we feel this, see this in an effect, that financially that COVID didn't have a huge impact on farmers as regards what the financial impact. And that's being played out amongst other surveys and other publications have shown that. But it did have an impact on them, on them personally, no different from all of us, if you know what I mean, as regards their community involvement and their
how they got on the society part.
Yes, so like the farmers did have, they were impacted like everyone else in that regard.
I was struck by the statistical, right, just about that very much livestock farmers want the online sales to continue as we do get back to what will become the new normal and controls are relaxed somewhat. What did you find among, what was the general mood of farmers? Like you surveyed 1,700 odd farmers back in December and January. How did you find the mood of farmers in general?
Well, it varied across the different bases. So as a whole, 3 out of 5 farmers, we have a sentiment question were positive about the outlook on it. But then that varied as you looked at the sector. So when we looked at the dairy sector, it was high. It was 3 out of 4 farmers were looked positive upon their sector, if you know what I mean. And that swung much, much more negatively than when we looked at the beef and tillage sector as regards their positivity outlook on the sector. And I suppose, look, that's a trend that we've seen for a while. Like we see, like, I suppose when you look at the beef sector in particular and the sheep sector, the reliance on cap, like, and a lot of that is up for negotiation at the moment. So you can see why there is probably.
So basically mood then followed economic performance of the sector. Is that a fair way to summarize it?
I wouldn't see that would be a million miles off, if you know what I mean. That, I mean, let's be honest, we know the dairy sector is quite strong at the moment, and the beef and sheep sector as well, as we speak today, the prices are quite strong in the market. But as you know, look, Phil, and you've been writing about this for years, that can change very, very quickly. It's the yo-yo effect. It's the troughs and the peaks, if you know what I mean, and being reliant on the cap.
Were there any surprises in it from yourselves when you were reviewing the information that came in?
Yeah, the stock figures was interesting. We asked farmers like what their thoughts about their stock numbers are. And if you look at it in the context, what's going on in the wider argument about climate change and some of the narrative that we hear about the national herd and cutting the national herd. And as somebody said to me before, there's no such thing as a national herd. There's 120,000 farmers out there with animals. But when we looked at the figures, that like 84% of farmers were going to maintain or increase their stocking numbers over the next 3 years. So, and that was across all the sectors. So, like, I mean, it was 54% were going to stay roughly the same and a 30% increase. But when we decided to look at that at the individual breakdown, and we said, God, maybe that's the dairy guys pushing on. And we all hear that narrative. And it's the beef guys are going to push back and one's going to outweigh the other. But actually, in fact, it wasn't. They were actually quite similar. So when we looked at the figures, 59% of dairy farmers wanted to stay the same and 57% of beef farmers wanted to stay the same. And 35% of dairy farmers are looking to increase and 27% of beef farmers are looking to decrease. So this narrative that you hear sometimes, maybe a little bit, that maybe will the beef sector pull back in numbers? While the numbers are coming back,
it's not what you found in your report all the same, if you summarize it based on those numbers.
Yeah, there's not going to be a mass dropping of numbers, if you know what I mean. It looks like that most beef farmers are quite happy to stay, roughly speaking, where they are. Now, when we asked the question, we gave them a margin of plus or minus 5%, if you know what I mean.
Philip, listen, we'll leave it there. Philip O'Connor, Head of Farm Support Services at IFAC, thank you very much.
Phelim O'Neill with that report. And that's it for this week. Thank you very much for tuning in. And remember that Farm Tech Talks is out on Friday evening. I'm Hannah Quinn Mulligan, and the sound engineer is Claire Nash.